The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're gonna get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
And other teams have scored all postseason. They've answered right back.
Castellanos, deep into left field. It is a fair ball. Home run. Castellanos, high fly ball. Way back. Goodbye.
Two home runs for Nick Castellanos a night after he had two home runs. First time that's ever happened in Major League Baseball playoff history. The Phillies advance to the National League Championship Series for the second year in a row. They eliminate the Atlanta Braves, who were thought to be as good as any team we've seen in a long, long time, in four games. And now, three of the four teams that had first-round buys, the Dodgers, the Orioles, and the Braves, are all out. Not only are they all out, they combined to win one game, and they lost nine against Arizona, against Texas, and against Philadelphia. The final four all set in the Major League Baseball playoffs. Rangers-Astros game one Sunday night, Phillies-Diamondbacks game one on Monday night. I know Tommy didn't agree with me yesterday, but I think they will go to a best of seven in this divisional round. To give that team that has to take the few days off and get out of the rhythm that they're in all year long of basically playing every day, I think they're going to give them more of a shot with a best of seven. Although Rob Manfred, the commissioner, said no changes as of now based on these results. It is dramatic. It's exciting. You know, it's best of five, but in many ways it kind of feels like when a two or a three seed gets eliminated in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I'm excited the Phillies are still around. I want to watch more of Bryce Harper and Nick Castellanos. Unbelievable. Four home runs in two games. The show today presented by Window Nation. Window Nation is our presenting sponsor. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Use my name, Kevin Sheehan. You'll get a free estimate and they'll take good care of you. Their fall sale right now includes buy two, get two free with no money down, no payments, and no interest for two full years. Jay Gruden coming up in the next segment of the show. He's with me every Friday during football season. I'll finish up the show in the last segment with the smell test. I've got eight picks after the two last night, which split. And I'll have a few thoughts on Maryland-Illinois. I think Maryland needs to beware of this game tomorrow in College Park against Illinois. The weather not supposed to be great here in the Mid-Atlantic this weekend. Actually, I think the weather in a lot of the Midwest and the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast not great this weekend. Last night, look, I had three screens working. I had the baseball game on, I had Kansas City-Denver on, and I had Houston against West Virginia. Two smell test picks last night. Houston plus the three against the Mountaineers. They gave up a 4th-and-10 with 20 seconds to go at the 50-yard line to fall behind 39-35. It was about to be one of the worst beats of the year. But there was a an unsportsmanlike conduct for over celebration, which meant that Houston got a big kickoff return. They completed a ball to West Virginia's 49 and then hit on a Hail Mary at the end of the game to win 41-39. Denver and Kansas City had a shot. It was 16-8, getting 10.5. Maybe some of you bought it to 11 and pushed. I didn't. Two quick takeaways from that game. I don't understand how Travis Kelce is always so wide open. I just don't understand why that guy is always wide open. It just makes sense to me that you would double him, you would bracket him, whether you're playing zone or zone match or man. It just seems like every week, you know, half of his catches or more than half are in a wide open field. He had over 100 yards of receptions in the first half. The other takeaway is this. Man, Russell Wilson was awful last night, and he had not been awful the first part of this year. Denver's defense was the major culprit in their 1-4 start. Last night, he threw for 95 yards. 95! He looked scared. And man, does he look smaller than ever in the pocket. Russell Wilson's going to the Hall of Fame. I think he is, based on, you know, an incredible career in Seattle. But man, he got to the Hall of Fame when he gets there off schedule. By extending plays, he's just not good in the pocket. And he looked panicked all night. He looked scared last night. He actually started running very late in the game. And it's, you know, pretty much the only time he's really gotten after it rushing the ball, except for the Washington game, if you recall. You know, had some big runs and big scrambles in that game. Couple of designed runs as well. He looks done. I don't know what Sean Payton's going to do out there. Their defense played as well against Kansas City as any defense has played this year against Kansas City. I don't know how that happens. It's the short week, I'm sure, to a certain degree. But Denver, who was right there with Chicago as the two worst defenses in the league, I mean, they held Kansas City to, you know, 19 points, 1-for-5 in the red zone. Overall, I mean, Kansas City had near 400 yards, but they only had 19 points because they were 4-for-13 on third down and 1-for-5 in the red zone. I mean, Denver turned it over 3 times in the game, and they actually were down 8. If they had gotten one more stop, they would have had the ball back with a chance. If Samaje Perine, by the way, didn't fumble the ball in the last possession, maybe they get in field goal range and we get a little 19-11 final. That would have been much better. All right, let's dial in here on Sunday. Atlanta and Washington. Remember last year's game? You know, you had the Falcons with Marcus Mariota. They were 5-6. Washington was 6-5. It was Thanksgiving weekend. It was cold. It was cloudy. And the game came down to that one, you know, Daron Payne deflection. Kendall Fuller picked it off. And Washington survived. And that would be their last win until the meaningless season finale. That was a big win. It put them at 7-5. They were very much right in the middle of the NFC playoff picture. They were the 6th seed. They weren't even the 7th seed. They were solidly in the postseason at that point in time. But, you know, the following week came a tie against the Giants, and then you had a bye week and a loss to the Giants and a loss to the Niners and a loss to the Browns where your head coach didn't even know that he was eliminated at the end of that game, and then the meaningless season finale against the Cowboys. This is a big game Sunday for Washington. Big game. You know, the Chicago game, a lot of you felt like, you know, the season's over if they lose to the Bears. Like I think I said yesterday, the 2-3 felt like 2-7 or 2-10 or whatever. It really did feel like a devastating loss because of the fact that the Bears were winless and the nature in which they lost that game. Sunday, in many ways, is really like, if this is going to be a season, a competitive season, some of you don't even want it, but if it's going to be a competitive season, you got to beat the Falcons Sunday, and it won't be easy. They're a 2.5-point underdog. Atlanta's better than you think. Last week, I told you before the Chicago game, don't sleep on Chicago's offense. And I was right, at least for that night. Now, a lot of you might chalk it up to Washington's defense being awful, but no, Chicago had played well offensively the week before, and there was a lot of discussion about Chicago this year as a potential NFC wildcard contender anyway because of what people thought they might be on offense, and you saw some of that. So this week, I'm going to tell you that beware of Atlanta as a team, but really of Atlanta's defense. Atlanta's good defensively. They're very, you know, identity driven on offense. They want to be a run first physical football team. So you know that going in, they're not as multidimensional. They're not as versatile as some of the other teams Washington has faced, including the Bears. Although Desmond Ridder had his best game. But I was very impressed after watching Atlanta a little bit yesterday afternoon, their game last week against Houston and their game the week before that against Jacksonville. I was impressed with them defensively. Now, the numbers may not speak to it. They're 21st per the DVOA metric. They're also next to last in takeaways and near the bottom of the list in sacks. But where they are very high on the list is third down defense. They're fifth in the league, seventh in the league in overall yards allowed. They're not making dynamic, explosive, game-changing plays defensively, but they are getting people off the field, and they've got players. And the guy to really keep an eye on is Jesse Bates, number three, their safety, who they got from Cincinnati in the offseason. They have other names that you're familiar with. Jeff Okuda's on that team. Calais Campbell's on that team. Grady Jarrett's always been a good player. Bud Dupree's on the team. Mike Hughes is on the team. But, you know, the addition of Bates, the addition of Caden Ellis, they're a pretty well-coached and disciplined defensive team. So last week I was kind of on the beware of Chicago's offense. It's much better than you think. I would say just be aware that Atlanta's overall a better team than maybe many of you know, but defensively impressed. They held Detroit to 20 points total. I mean, that's the high-flying Lions at this point. You know, they were really right there with Jacksonville and Wembley. It was the turnovers that killed them. Houston put up 37 a couple of weeks ago against Jacksonville and lost 21-19 last week against Atlanta. Atlanta's a well-coached team, both sides of the ball, physical, both sides of the ball. So with that, let me get to Washington wins if and my prediction on the game on Sunday. So my keys to a win over Atlanta. Number one is they've got to stop the run. That's what Atlanta wants to do, even though Desmond Ridder had a big week last week throwing the football. They are a run-first team. It's who Arthur Smith is. It's why they drafted a running back in Bijan Robinson in the first round. It's why they drafted a guard in the second round, Bergeron, the kid from Syracuse, who we were talking about maybe for Washington heading into the April draft. Washington gave up .178 on the ground to the Bears. I mean, all of their running backs ran it against them. The quarterback ran it against them. And when everybody got hurt, the fullback came in and ran it a little bit against them. Atlanta's going to be in 12 personnel a lot, right? One back, two tight ends. But a lot of times they'll be in one back with a fullback and two tight ends or a fullback and one tight end. It's not unusual to see three tight ends out there. They want to run the football. I think the answer for Washington is we're going to see more five-man front than we've seen, more of that Cinco package. We'll talk to Jay Gruden and get his thoughts on, you know, what he thinks of Atlanta and see if he's watched a lot of Atlanta. But stopping the run with, you know, five-man front, whether that's two backers or one backer and three safeties, I don't know. But they've got to be in run-stopping mode. They did a good job against Buffalo, you know, while the game was still competitive. They did a good job against Philadelphia stopping the run. They did not do a good job against Chicago. They didn't do a good job of stopping the run early, if you recall, against Denver either. there are a couple of concerns I clearly have about them defensively. Coverage is a bigger concern for me, but I think, you know, they haven't been consistent against the run. They've got to stop the run Sunday, which means also, by the way, they've got to tackle well everywhere. They've got to tackle well Sunday. They did not tackle well, you know, in that loss to Chicago. In the loss to Philly, they didn't tackle well at times. Tyler Allgeier is one of the best yards after contact running backs in the league. He's the backup to Bijan Robinson, who is really, really sick in space. I mean, he is so good. He's going to make people miss. He's going to make people look bad. You've got to have all 11 guys Sunday, you know, involved in tackling these runners. Secondly, you've got to protect the quarterback. We cannot continue to see Sam Howell get hit and get sacked. Now, I think they've done a better job the last two games, you know, with quick game, with sprint outs, with screens. And, you know, this is a good defense. It's not a defense that sacked a lot of people or turned people over, but you've got to protect Sam Howell. Chicago was not a blitzing team before last Thursday night, and they came after Sam, especially in the second half with the kitchen sink. Who knows what Atlanta, the Falcons will do. You've got to protect him. You've got to protect him like you have the last two games, with good play calling, good protection when you do drop him back. But you can't overcome the lost yardage from 6-7 sacks on Sunday. If, you know, Chicago wasn't a Chicago had two sacks entering the game last week, and they got after Sam and sacked him a bunch. So can't take the sacks, got to protect the quarterback in this game. Number three, Washington beats Atlanta. If they get off to a really fast start and get the lead, Atlanta's not a team I don't think that can come from behind. You know, and you got to put this game on Desmond Ridder. I know he played well last week, but that's the choice that you make. Put it on Desmond Ridder. So get a lead is important. Coverage will be important. Their receivers, you know, Pitts, London, Mac Hollins, they are big. All three of them 6'4" or bigger. Their tight end Jonnu Smith, big. You know, you're not going to have Forbes probably for the same number of snaps. It'll be interesting to see what they do coverage-wise. Is St. Juice on the outside, or does he move to the slot to cover Pitts, who actually lines up as a tight end in the slot with, you know, others kind of lined up on the line of scrimmage? But you've got to be better in coverage. You've got to communicate better. These are big receivers. Ridder will give them a chance. They're not explosive. Not yet, anyway. I thought London would be. Well, I didn't think London would. London was the big receiver in that draft. I thought that Pitts would be a lot more than he's been, but they've got players on this team. The question for them has been at quarterback. You know, and he had his best game last week, which means you're not going to see Taylor Heinicke this week, I don't think, unless Ridder gets hurt. So stop the run, I think, is really important. Protecting Sam Howell, and he's got to protect himself. Get a lead against Atlanta. The way Atlanta wins games is the, you know, back and forth one score games. Get a double digit lead. See if they can throw the ball to get back into it. I don't think they can. Coverage against big receivers will be a big deal. Also, Cordarrelle Patterson came back last week. Just remember, he's a guy that's killed teams. He is a jack of all trades. He had 50-some-odd yards rushing and some, you know, return yards against Washington last year. He was back there returning kicks. I always have loved him. Keep an eye on Cordarrelle Patterson. All right, my final score prediction, Washington 21, Atlanta 19. I think they win Sunday in a very tight game. It's not like last week when I picked Washington to win by three, but I said I really feel, you know, sick about this game because I love Chicago plus the number and they could definitely lose the game. I actually feel good about Washington winning Sunday. It's not going to be easy. It's also one of those games, if you want to go have a season, you know, 3-3 with a win over Atlanta, that could come back and be huge at the end of the year because Atlanta's probably going to be in the mix. I think they're good enough to be in the mix all year long. All right, Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Buy two, get two free. If you've been thinking about new windows, now is the time to do it. Your home will look better. You'll save big on your energy bills, and you're not going to pay anything until the year 2025. Buy two, get two free, no money down, no payments, no interest charged until the year 2025. I promise you that you can rely and trust Window Nation. Just give them a shot. Call them. Get a free estimate by mentioning my name. Shop it around if you want. There's nothing to lose. If you've been thinking about new windows, get them now before the cold weather comes. You will more than have a return on investment just with the energy savings alone on new windows, not to mention your home will look a lot better. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Tell them that I sent you. Jay Gruden, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fall is here, and if you're looking for that outdoor destination to watch football, hang out with friends, listen to music, look no further than the Bullpen. Yeah, that Bullpen, right in the heart of Navy Yard, right next to Nats Park. Admission, absolutely free. Of course, the Bullpen's always been the spot for baseball fans, but this year, they're bringing you all of the NFL and college football action you can handle on weekends. So get your guys together, wear your team colors, head on over to the Bullpen. They've got games, they've got drinks, they've got the energy to make every moment unforgettable. Visit them today at thebullpendc.com to see their game schedule. Outdoors this time of year, watching football, hanging out with friends. You're looking for a spot. This is it. Thebullpendc.com to see their game schedule. Jay Gruden is with me, as he has been and will be every Friday during football season. I'm assuming that you saw the story about Ron putting up the sign in the locker room that read, "Do your job." You saw that, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever put up a sign or come up with a slogan in an effort to motivate or get your message across to your team?
I think sometimes in OTAs, maybe the first day of training camp, maybe you come up with something that, you know, they can kind of go by. I remember my brother did a pound the rock thing, and we build blocks. I mean, there's a lot of different slogans you do. I don't remember each individual slogan, but yeah, sometimes you make a t-shirt and give them out, but, you know, yeah, what the heck?
Do they work?
I mean, it's something to talk about. You know, it's something that everybody can relate to, you're hoping. You know, do your job is a common one that, you know, Bill Belichick and a lot of people have used before. And it's, you know, basically making sure that everybody understands that do your job. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing, but do your job the best you can, and everything else will work out. But, you know, go finger pointing. It's not about anybody else but yourself and doing the things correctly the way you're supposed to do them.
How hard is it, you know, especially in a city that cares, and you coached here, and it's a city that cares. I mean, there are several of them, but this one, you know, is passionate about its football team. How hard is it to block out all of the noise that comes with, you know, 24/7 social media, you know, talk radio, everything for yourself and then for the players?
Well, it's pro football, and it's what you signed up for. I promise you, every other market, if you're not doing well, they're going to be doing the same thing. I mean, you think they're happy in Carolina right now? Maybe not to the extent that it happens in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, but you're still going to get a lot of social media grumblings and people complaining and wanting your job, and a lot of issues you got to deal with. But, you know, the whole thing about pro football, you got to be mentally tough as a coach and as a player. And if you can't handle it, then you're not in the right business. It's what to be expected. I grew up in a coach's family. My dad was a coach, and we used to handle all kinds of people at IU and Notre Dame and Tampa Bay Buccaneers growing up. That's just the way it is. That's the way I understand it to be. You got to win, or else you're going to get people after you.
Did it ever get to you?
No, it's just commonplace. I understand that grew up to be such great competitors that if we lost, I didn't have to somebody. I was mad at myself enough where I didn't have to listen to anybody else tell me how dumb I was. I felt like I was an idiot already for losing myself. So, you know, you got to be hard on yourself when you lose. You got to be critical of yourself. You got to move on. Can't listen to the outside noise and all that stuff. But you do have to take it personal. You do have to make sure you do things differently and try to get your team in the right position to win. And difficult at times, but just the way it is in pro football. Or you got to find another job.
Do you think it's much harder for players today to handle the criticism than it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago or when you played?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're active on social media. I mean, you can get absorbed with all that information, all the people being critical of you, and it can be brutal. I mean, that's why I did, you know, I just started a Twitter 6 months ago or whatever it was, just because I'm afraid I would, like, hunt people down and talk crap. I don't even read the comments on that thing. So it can be brutal. And if you're and for these young kids who have been coddled their whole life, they've been the best in high school, they've been the best in college, they're drafted high, and now all of a sudden they come to a place and they don't succeed like they thought, and they're just getting hammered on social media, it can be hard on them. And, you know, there should be opportunities for these young kids to get some counseling and seek some help for some of this stuff, because it is tough for a 21, 22-year-old kid to come to a situation and not do what he's expected to do and just get hammered all the time. And mentally, it can be tough on them, but the good ones overcome it and they'll persevere.
At @coach_JGruden on Twitter. Give him a follow. Former head coach of the Washington football team and OC of the Cincinnati Bengals /Jacksonville Jaguars in your bio. Why didn't you put former head coach of the Washington Redskins? You weren't the head coach of
my
the Washington football
the
team.
Account. I forgot to change it. Yeah. My son set up the account for me. He wanted me to get on social media a little bit, so he started it for me, and I haven't changed it yet. But I'll get it changed, my fault.
You're smart, by the way, not to read the comments. And I haven't even read your comments. I'm not suggesting that they're negative, but there are people just out there trying to get you to respond. I mean, it's really low rent across the board on social media. It's unbelievable.
Some of these guys are ultra-talented with their comments. I mean, they can really get to your core. I mean, they really get you.
Oh yeah, well, and occasionally they're very funny too. Did you ever have a player that you coached in sort of the social media era, which really would have been more here, less in Cincinnati, that couldn't deal with it, and you really had to help him?
Not really. The main ones were the ones that used it and talked about the team in a negative way or coaches in a negative way. That's the ones that really got to me, you know. But I don't think anybody really had an issue or was really getting depressed or any of that. The ones that I didn't like were the ones that used their platform to type something about other people or negatively about the team.
Where do you think this team is right now after losing by 20 and then having that long of a layoff?
You know, I don't know. I just there's a couple things that bother me, that would bother me if I was a coach, and I would start with the best unit, and that's the defensive line. You know, they have four first-rounders on that defensive line, and they should be dominating the line of scrimmage, and they're not, and I don't know why. You know, so that's the first thing we got to probe into. We got to get our best players on our football team as a group. They have to dominate their position. They're not doing it right now. They're not helping out the linebackers. Obviously, the secondary is suffering because of that. But we got to hit the quarterback often, and we got to stop the run, period. I mean, there's four first-rounders, right? That's one thing. And then, obviously, secondary is the techniques and some of the things. They got to really look into that and give their corners some help. Offensively, you know, we got to protect the quarterback better. It's simple. Sam can't get sacked four or five times a game and expect to win. You can't have that many negative plays against a good pro football team and expect to win. He might throw for a lot of yards. That's great. That'll all look cool. Hey, he threw for 280 yards. Yeah, he got sacked six times, and you're down 27-3 in the first half. So that can't happen. Got to stay in games early. Can't turn the ball over and continue to play hard. So 2-3 right now, and the season's not over. They've got a lot of football left. But number one, defensive line's got to play better. They're the best unit. Number two, we got to protect the quarterback better. And then number three, protect the football and play close games and continue to finish tackle better. My God.
Would that have been the pitch from you, say, on Wednesday when everybody got back together and you began preparation for Atlanta? Would there have been a big get-together in that big, you know, in that big auditorium where you would have addressed the whole team?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I don't like to single out certain people, but I think you can single out certain units maybe. And I think the reason why I would go after the defensive line, because I know Duron and Jonathan Allen, and they're strong enough individuals where they could take a little criticism as long as, you know, and I think sometimes you have to get after some of the best players and other players that are not quite that good to say, damn, he's going after the defensive line. You better step it up too. That's part of the reason, because I know they're mentally tough and they're physically tough and they can handle some criticism. And then you go from there and you go about the tackling, you go about the fundamentals, you go about the practice schedule, you make sure everybody's on board to finish the season in a strong way. So that's the most important thing, is how we're going to attack the rest of the season. We're going to make it about us. Do your job is the slogan, obviously, so that's a good way to start.
I remember Gary Williams, the Hall of Fame basketball coach at Maryland. Gary's told me many times before that when some of his best teams were teams in which his best player was a player he could get on in front of everybody, like Juan Dixon, who led them to the 2002 national championship, Gravis Vasquez, he could get on them really hard, which meant that the rest of the team, you know, knew if the best player was taking the wrath of the coach, well, they couldn't push back. That is important in a locker room, isn't it? That your best players can take it.
For sure. You know, you can't have your best player be a prima donna that can't handle criticism. So that's very important that everybody gets treated equally in the locker room. You can't just yell at your player who's struggling. It's a free agent, college free agent, who's, you know, lucky to be there. You got to get after everybody equally, and that's important. I can remember the story about Bobby Knight when he was coaching the Olympics and Michael Jordan. They were winning by 35 at half, and he came in there and tried to motivate the team. He jumped right on Michael Jordan. You know, it's, are you ever going to set a screen? You know, so yeah
exactly.
You got to try to motivate.
Yeah, he probably had 27 in the first half. He's screaming at him for setting his screen.
Yep.
So what about, though, taking responsibility on yourself as the head coach? Like, doesn't Ron have to do some of that as well?
Yeah, for sure. You know, you have to. That's ultimately your responsibility. The product you put on the field is on you as a head coach. And I'd like to think I took responsibility for our shortcomings, whether it's drafting players or losing games or what have you, coaching decisions, going for it on fourth down or what have you. But ultimately, it's the coach's responsibility. He's in charge of the draft. He's in charge of free agents. He's got no excuses whatsoever. He can't blame a GM. He can't blame the owner anymore. This is his product that he's putting out there, and he needs to take responsibility. Season's not over. They're only 2-3. I mean, they beat Atlanta, they're back to 500, and they're right back in the playoff picture.
Right. It did feel after a 20-point loss and being down 27-3 that they went from 2-2 to 2-10. It did feel that way.
Yeah.
You know the saying that he's lost the team? You know, fans say that. I don't know. Maybe you guys say it too. When, you know, it usually refers to players who have kind of tuned out a coach. Is that a legitimate thing?
Oh, yeah. 100%. And that happens more often than not. It's probably happened in probably 17 or 18 locker rooms right now. You know, you try your darndest not to lose the team, and I felt like I probably lost the team my last year. We were 0-5 and whatever. That's probably why I got fired. But maybe, I don't know. But, yeah, I think sometimes your message can get stale, and if you're not producing, people have to have somebody to blame. And unfortunately, it is the head coach. That's just the way it is. That's the business that we're in. And the do-your-job slogan is a panic attack probably type slogan. I don't think he's really blaming the players with that slogan. I think he's just trying to get across the message, quit worrying about other people, and just do your job.
Yeah. All right. By the way, in sort of talking about, you know, coaches and the accountability that they have to have in the locker room as well, just to bring up another Hall of Fame college basketball coach, because he used to work, you know, at the station, Coach Thompson, John Thompson, used to say, if coaches start taking the blame too much, the owner will start to believe him. And that's a problem, too.
Good one.
Yeah. Are they throwing the ball too much?
Well, last week didn't count because they're down 27-3 at the half. They had to. But, yeah, I think anytime you look at the stat line, if you see Sam Howell with more than 35, I think it's they're probably going to lose. They need to get that down, and they need to get Brian Robinson more involved, and obviously to try to eat up some clock, keep their defense fresh. But when they get behind like that, you have no choice. To get back in the game, you got to throw it. You got to get some chunk plays, and that wasn't the case. That was the case in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm not even really referring to, you know, being down and having to throw the ball. I think most people understand that. I'm just saying, in general, are they throwing the ball too much with, you know, the game still competitive?
I don't know. I think there's extensions of the running game that are passes like bubble screens and RPOs and things of that nature that teams have to do. I don't know if Washington's good enough up front with their tight end included to just be able to ground and pound teams to death. I just don't think. I think if you start trying to run the ball on first and second down, you're stuck in third and eight. That makes it worse for Sam Howell than giving them a chance to do quick game or bubble screens on first down. But, yeah, I think ultimately I agree that they do need to get Brian more involved. He's running the ball very hard, very effectively, and I think they need to try to see how much he can handle as far as the game is concerned and if he can move the chains, we're running the ball. But they do need to, I think, to open up the run, they need to throw it here.
Did you ever worry about run-pass balance in competitive games? I'm not talking about the games that get sideways and you end up with 50-plus attempts because you're behind. You know, Belichick, like some of these New England teams in recent years with Brady, you know, it seemed as if they would do whatever it took based on the opponent to move the football and score. Sometimes that was heavy run to pass. Sometimes that was heavy pass to run. How did you view it? Did you ever get caught up in, we got to be balanced?
A little bit because, you know, I had a boss that would put something on my desk after every game with the running stats of everybody in our division, and the team that ran the ball the best usually won the game, and that's usually the case because if you have a lead, you run the ball more. But yeah, so I had to be aware of that. But no, I agree with the other side, the Belichick side. You got to do what you have to do to win the game, and sometimes throwing the ball is a lot easier than running the ball between the tackles. Some defensive linemen had two huge interior defensive linemen, and it was hard to get in there. So you needed to throw the ball, get the ball out on the edge, get the ball out on perimeter somehow. So, yeah, different defenses dictated the way you should attack offensively. Now, sometimes your identity offensively you shouldn't worry about who they have on defense. This is what we're going to do. But sometimes it's very difficult to do that. You need to change it up.
You know, you just can't throw it out there that your boss put running stats from the other teams in the division on your desk. Who was that,
yeah.
Dan or Bruce?
I'm sure it was Bruce. Bruce was big into that stuff. And, you know, and Dan, you know, Dan, when Dan grew up as a Redskins fan, you know, he was obviously a Joe Gibbs, loved Joe Gibbs and the Redskins, and they were very effective at running those counter OTs and running the ball, John Riggins and all that stuff. So that's what he knew. And it's just very hard to execute that plan on a week-to-week basis in the NFL.
Yeah, in today's NFL. So how would you handle that?
I would, you know, throw the thing in the garbage and say, yeah, I understand. I'm trying my best, you know. But ultimately, I figure out what's best for our football team today at this moment in time and how to attack the Dallas Cowboys or whoever we're getting ready to play.
But did you have to pitch them? Was that part of the job to continue to pitch, you know, Bruce and or Dan on what you were doing and why you were doing? And, you know, was that
an issue? Is when you have a president and owner that think they're smarter than you, and when it comes to football, that's a problem. You know, so you're never going to be right. They always know more than you. I mean, Bruce has been around football for a long time. He's got a lot of history to back up his thoughts and why he believes what he believes, Al Davis and all that stuff. And Dan thinks he knows, he thinks he invented the game. So that was the issue. So we had to deal with that. I had to take in all the criticism and all their advice and make do with it and then try to figure out ways to get it done on my side of the deal. So fun.
Yeah, well, it's very much like it's like a CEO who has to spend more time, placating the shareholders than running the company. And I'm just wondering if it ever got exhausting for you.
It wore on me at the end, at the very end. I think the once training camp hit my last year, but you know, they didn't give my coaches another year on their contract like they do every year. And I think that was kind of like everything just started spiraling from there.
All right.
I had chant, dead man walking in the hallway. Dead man walking.
No one was actually saying that. But you felt it. See,
I was thinking that in my head.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, people, you have a great sense of humor. And did you deal with it in sort of a sense of, with your sense of humor? Did you laugh at it, or was it just walking
tried. It's not funny because there's so many coaches that rely on this.
Right.
You know, I was fortunate to get a pretty good contract, but these coaches are, you know, they're coaching for their life and, you know, feeding their families and all that. I mean, it wasn't that bad. It's not like they're going to starve, but, you know, nobody wants to move and get fired and have to move every year as a coach. You like to have some stability, and we just didn't have any.
Right.
He never will in pro football, so he shouldn't coach if you look for stability.
Yeah, you think Belichick's got stability right now?
Yeah, no.
No, but I'm being serious about what his position right now with Kraft. Do you think this is it for Belichick?
Do whatever he wants. I mean, he's 70 plus years old. I don't know why he's putting himself through this anyway. I mean, go enjoy yourself. Go on a boat. Go fishing. Go play some golf. I mean, why put yourself through this and watch Mac Jones and Bill O'Brien call a game and score 3 points in two games? I mean, this is get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and get your practice schedule, your walkthrough, and make sure everybody's on time. And oh God, poor guy. It's different when you have like Tom Brady running a show on offense and all that stuff. This is not a job for, I don't know. I give him credit for fighting through this thing and sticking through it. I'd like to see what happens next year. I just can't imagine doing it at 70 years old.
Yeah, but I bet you miss the competition.
I miss the competition. I miss the camaraderie of the players and some of the coaches, you know. But, you know, there's so much of, you know, it's just so much time, you know, the walkthroughs and all that, the preparation and drawing up the cards. It's kind of a grind. It wears you out. I do miss the competition, and I do miss the players.
Yeah, I think I asked you once before because I remember specifically the way you answered it. I said, how much more fun was it for you at times being an offensive coordinator where you only had, you know, you didn't have to worry about a lot of that stuff. And you said it's just a lot easier,
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, I had a defensive head coach too. Marvin Lewis, a great head coach for an offensive coordinator because he would sit in some of the meetings, but he didn't really know a whole lot about offense or, you know, he knew run the ball or throw the ball or go for it on fourth down, but you know, some of the other details, he didn't really know that much. So it was great. He was a great coach to work for.
Hey, what do you think of Jack Del Rio as a defensive mind in the NFL? You coached against him. You know, right now fans are getting on him. They want, you know, heads to roll. What do you think and or what have you thought of Jack Del Rio?
Well, I just feel like he's simple Jack. You know, he doesn't do a whole lot defensively. They're sound. They should be sound in what they do. They play limited coverages, limited fronts, but they expect their players to be in the right place. There's a lot of coordinators like that. Don't do a whole lot of exotic blitzes. You know, they play the coverage that they're going to play, and they just hope they're better than you. And if they're not better than you, then they give up gashes because teams have a pretty good idea how to attack their defenses.
All right. One more about them before I get to Atlanta. The trade deadline's October 31st. Would you consider, they have a lot of cap room. I think they've got the fifth most cap room projected right now for 2024. Montez Sweat and Chase Young are right now not under contract for 2024. What would you be thinking as it relates to both of those players?
Well, I just hate to think that you lose a player and not maximize your return. So if you can maximize your return right now, knowing that you are unlikely to sign one or both of them, you got to get something for them. I just, you know, it goes back to the Kirk Cousins and even Trent Williams. I mean, we had two elite players and we got nothing for them, basically. So if you can get something for them now, you got to do it because, you know, the end of the year, they're going to be gone. So you got to maximize your return. You just don't want to get a supplemental free agent or a draft pick in the third round because you lose a free agent. You got to get something for them.
So if there's if the plan is to keep one of them right now, what would be your lean in terms of who you'd want to keep and sign for next year?
Sweat. It's not even close. I'd keep Sweat. It's not even close to me. And that's just me watching from. I don't know what the guys are like in the locker room. I know Sweat because I had him for a little while. I don't know Chase Young at all, but just from what I see on tape and the production, I would take Sweat. He's fast. He can run. He's been productive. The other guy's been injured a little bit, overhyped. He hasn't. His play hasn't matched where it should be with his athletic ability and his size. He doesn't dominate the game like a guy with that body type. The way he looks, his athletic ability should, in my opinion, and I don't know why.
I mean, don't you think in watching him the last couple of weeks in particular that we're starting to see a little bit more of what we saw his rookie year with Chase?
It's getting better. And maybe his knee has something to do with it and he's getting back into shape and all that stuff. But and maybe they do need to wait and let the season play out and see how his knee strength is and make the right decision. Because athletically and talent-wise, there's no question that Chase Young should be better than Sweat, right? But when you look at the film, Sweat's better than Chase Young, and I just don't know why. So maybe give Chase Young another, you know, let him finish out the year, because this is a very important decision. Defensive ends don't grow on trees. You don't want to lose good pass rushers. Maybe there's a way to get them both on your team. Maybe get rid of Painter Allen and try to open up, or whatever you got to do. But I would really take my time and make sure I'm making the right decision with these defensive ends, because you look at Bosa's in the league, and you look at Myles Garrett, and you look at those guys who could dominate a game. If you can get one of those guys on your team, it makes it a heck of a lot easier for your defensive staff to coach.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the tackles, because the other day we did this on radio and we did a call segment. I'm sure you'd be thrilled to hear all of the calls. But I said maybe there's another solution here, and maybe the solution is, even though he's one of your team leaders and he's an excellent player, but his contract runs out after 2025, maybe you deal John Allen and you pay both of them. Because you just paid Payne. It'd be hard to get rid of Payne now. And I guess my question to you, and you kind of already answered it, is, but if you're not going to pay four number one draft choices contract extensions, and you only get to pick one to move on from, you sort of implied there that it would be a tackle more than it would be an end.
Yes. That would be my idea. You're a 4-3 team, and you're going to be in basically nickel personnel a lot. And those defensive ends are critical. Both of them can run, and both of them are athletic. So that's important. I think if you keep one of your best pass-rushing defensive tackles, which is either Painter Allen, whoever you like better, then you can replace that position a lot easier than you can a pass-rushing defensive end. The defensive ends, they're hard to find. Defensive tackles that can take on double teams and stop the run, those are easier to find to me than pass-rushing defensive ends. That's why you keep the best pass-rushing three technique, keep him in the building, and then move on from the other one.
All right. Sunday, they're 2.5-point underdogs right now at Atlanta. Have you taken a look at Atlanta? What's the game plan to beat the Falcons Sunday?
I have watched Atlanta. Atlanta's an interesting team. They're a two tight end team, so it's going to force, obviously, Washington to be a more base personnel, which whether they go five defensive linemen and two linebackers or four defensive linemen and three linebackers, that'll be what they do. I just don't know if Washington has three good linebackers to line up. I would probably think they're going to go five defensive linemen and two linebackers. I don't know. Who knows? But, they're going to try to run the ball. They have two excellent backs, and obviously Desmond Ridder can run. He's struggling a little bit throwing the ball, but they do have receivers they can throw to. You know, Drake London is probably ready to roll after watching the tape the last 2 weeks, right, to go after the corner. So he's probably excited as hell to play. But they're a good football team, and defensively they're playing a lot better than people think. So I right now I would err on the side of taking Atlanta just because of their ability to run the ball and be more balanced. And I think pass rush-wise, I think Atlanta can get after the quarterback.
Did you know Arthur Smith? You know, he was here briefly in the organization before you got here, but did you get to know him at all?
I did not. You know, his dad, obviously Fred, I got to know him a little bit. He, you know, he wasn't a fan of mine for whatever reason. But anyway, Arthur's a good coach, man. I really respect him as far as his ability to call plays, especially at Tennessee, and then he comes here. And I like that he's trying to establish an identity. And as a head coach, you have to, if you want to be able to run the ball, you draft a big back, they draft Bijan. They go out and get a couple blocking tight ends, the Jono Smith. They take him from Tennessee. They got Jake Matthews. They have good offensive linemen that are big and physical. They got the, and that's what they're trying to do. So now you can run the ball, you can run your bootlegs and your play actions, and that's who they are. And if they get down and they have to throw it, they're not going to come back. You know, but they can bludgeon you into the ground. They can play physical football, and if they stay close in the fourth quarter, they'll have a chance to win a lot of games.
So you like Atlanta?
I do like Atlanta. I do like Atlanta. I think Washington, you know, they got to start fast. You know, right now, when you're on a three-game losing streak and you're reading all the doubters and all the haters, you're going to come out and you're going to be excited to play and shut everybody up. But if you get hit in the mouth early, like Chicago hit them in the mouth early, I don't know if they can. I don't know if they'll be able to bounce back. You know, that was a pretty brutal beating in the first half they took. And if anything like that happens in the first half against Atlanta, it'll be a wrap. I don't know if Atlanta has the firepower to do that. I didn't think Chicago did either, but I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll go down the wire, field goal for one of the other teams.
Let's get to just the rest of the NFL card real quickly, and then I'll let you run. What do you make of the Cowboys right now after getting throttled by the 49ers? They've got the Chargers on Monday night, but just give me your thoughts real quickly on Dallas.
Well, I think they're looking for an identity as well as a lot of teams are. You know, the Mike McCarthy gets rid of Kellen Moore because he wants to run the ball more, and he's run the ball less than Kellen Moore did. So it makes no sense. And then he's trying to say that we're the Texas, we're not a West Coast team, we're a Texas Coast team. Nobody knows what the hell that is. That doesn't mean anything. They're not a West Coast team. Their spacing isn't very good offensively. They're not running the ball effectively. Pollard is really not a 20-plus carry guy anyway. Pollard's more of a 10-plus carry guy. They need to have another back, whether it's Rock, whoever that guy's name is, to take the load off of them. Yeah. They need a physical back in there to go along with Pollard. They got CeeDee Lamb. They don't give him the ball very much. They go out and get Cooks. They never throw the ball to him. So they got to figure out what the hell they are, who they are, in order for them to be good.
What about Dak?
Well, Dak right now is struggling in known passing situations, which is surprising. He's been in the league for a long time. And he's not using his legs like he did early in his career. You know, this is a big physical quarterback that can really run coming out of Mississippi State. And now he's put himself in the pocket as a pocket passer like he's Tom Brady or whatever. He's got to be able to run a little bit more. And he's struggling, like I said. I don't know if it's a system or what, but he should be playing a lot better. He's underachieving in a big way through five games, in my opinion.
We're only 5 weeks into the season, but is it pretty clear to you that the 49ers are the best team in the league?
I don't think it's close right now. And Philadelphia will give them a little bit of a run. Obviously, Kansas City with Mahomes and Miami with their speed. I think you could have a Final Four right now and play it out. Those are the four best teams in the league by far, in my opinion. But San Francisco, top to bottom, with the way Brock Purdy's playing and distributing the ball, yeah, they're the best team. You know, nobody really could predict that Brock Purdy, as the last pick in the draft, would be as good as he is, as accurate, as anticipation, as toughness, his ability to move in the pocket. For a young quarterback to do that is very, very impressive. And Debo and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle and Trent Williams on offense, and then you got an elite pass rusher, an elite linebacker, an elite safety on defense. And yeah, they're by far the best team. They have no weaknesses. I forgot Christian McCaffrey, too.
Yeah, McCaffrey, too. The 49ers and Eagles play this year, and the Chiefs and the Dolphins play. They actually play that game in Germany in early November. That's your Final Four. I'm curious as to what you think of Detroit right now. Do you think they're the third best team in the NFC?
Yeah, I do. I think Jared Goff is playing pretty good. There's not a lot of really good quarterbacks in the NFC right now. You look at them, I think obviously it's Hurts, and then you get some other ones. Goff is right up there. Geno Smith is playing a lot better. Obviously Matthew Stafford is a good quarterback, and Purdy. Jared Goff is playing very good. He is a great game manager. He's accurate. He's getting the ball to the right people. Once they get their guys healthy back on offense, they're going to be team to be reckoned with. And Aaron Glenn's done a great job of that defense. That's the weakness that we thought they're going to have at Detroit. They weren't going to be able to stop anybody. They had one pass rusher, but they're playing great defensively, and that's the biggest surprise, and that's what makes them a contender.
All right, let's finish up with give me your lock of the week in the NFL.
My lock of the week. Who's Carolina play?
They play Miami. They're getting right now they're getting 13.5.
Wow. Yeah, I'll take Miami again.
You take Miami again, laying the 13.5. That was your pick last week as well. I was on the Giants. You know, they had a chance late to get the backdoor cover with Tyrod Taylor.
Well, the Bills is an easy one too. The Bills, the Giants' entire team is hurt right now. And the Bills are what, 12 or 13?
They're 14.5 now and climbing. Yeah.
Climbing.
Yeah, it's climbing.
Yeah, they should be. You watch the Giants play, and bless their heart, man, they just don't have any. They don't have anything on offense right now. It's a struggle. Daniel Jones gets high load in the pocket. I mean, he gets hit from the backside, the front side, the low side, high side, and you don't get any separation at receiver. It's tough. I mean, it's tough to be a Giants fan. Tough to be a play caller at New York Giants Stadium.
You know, in mentioning him, I think the way you just described it, I think you like Daniel Jones. You've said that before. I mean, in watching the Giants, to me, it's like he doesn't have a chance. Like, just doesn't have a shot. They've got no – their best players have been out, and it's a jailbreak on every single snap, running play or passing play.
Well, he missed a couple throws in the game. Bless his heart. He actually had a clean pocket. I'm like, damn, that's really uncharacteristic. But then every other pass, there's somebody at his ankles or somebody on his back. I mean, it is just – it's – that wears on you as a quarterback when you're getting hit every play. That's what worries me about Sam Howell a little bit, taking all these sacks. I don't want the quarterback to get gun shy and think he's going to get hit on every play. We got to have some clean pockets. You got to protect them. Whether it's three step, get him outside the pocket, let him set his feet and throw. But that's not happening in New York, and that doesn't happen very often here.
No. All right. Great job. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you next week.
Right,
but by the way, did we decide which game is your lock? Is it the Bills or the Dolphins? You love these big favorites. Which one are you playing?
Well, I mean, they're big favorites for a reason. They're the better team.
Well, I understand.
I'm taking the Dolphins.
Okay, so
the Dolphins. Carolina can't stop Miami, and Miami can stop Carolina. So why wouldn't you lay 13?
Miami minus the 13.5. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you, Kevin.
All right, when we come back, smell test to finish up the show, and a thought or two on Maryland hosting Illinois tomorrow to try to get to 6-1 on the season. We'll get to that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Kevin looks where the John Q. Public is putting their cash and does the opposite. It's time for the smell test.
Smell test brought to you by my good friends at MyBookie. Guys, I think this is the final week of this incredible offer, offering a 110% cash deposit bonus on your initial deposit. $50 minimum, $1,000 max. If you put in $1,000, you're going to have $2,100 in your account. This is an unheard of offer. It's just available to the listeners of this podcast. You have to use my promo code It's Kevin DC after going to mybookie.ag. They're going to more than double your money before you even place a bet with MyBookie. MyBookie.ag, promo code Kevin DC. I've mentioned this ad nauseum many times in the past. If you're doing this the right way and you only have one site, you should go to MyBookie, sign up, take the free cash, and have a place where you can get a better point spread on occasion, a better price on occasion. It adds up. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC for an incredible cash deposit bonus on your initial deposit. All right. I was on radio earlier doing the smell test, and I gave out Utah State tonight plus the 4 against Fresno. And then I looked down at my phone, and I had one of my offshore contacts texting me saying, I know you usually do the smell test now, but check out the Utah State line. It had gone from 4 to 6 in like 4 minutes. So I took Utah State out of the smell test. I might play them tonight. I just needed more research, and I haven't had the time to do it. So take Utah State out if you heard it on radio earlier today. I took it out on radio as well. But it was just funny how that the timing of that was as I was giving Utah State out. I'm glad I looked at my phone. Anyway, 30-30-2 overall so far. 500's not good enough. Jason knows that. He texts me, or tweets me, excuse me, every year to say, you do know that 500, I don't win money on your picks. Yes, Jason, I'm very aware of that. I understand how it works. I've been doing this for a while. I gotta do my job better, no doubt. I've got to be much better at my job. I got to hit it 52.3% or 52.4%, whatever it is, to get you guys into a winning percentage. So do my job. That's what I'm focused on. I've got, in addition to the two picks last night, which split Houston plus the 3 with the Hail Mary to get the cover, Denver plus the 10.5, losing by a half point. So I am officially right at 500 still at 30-30-2 on the season. All right, let's start tomorrow. Wisconsin's laying 10 to Iowa. Big number. Public's playing Iowa. Give me the Badgers at home, laying the 10. In the ACC, two games tomorrow that I like. One involving Miami. Remember how they lost last week by not taking a knee? They're getting 3.5 in Chapel Hill against Carolina. North Carolina is the public play. There's sharp money on Miami. That line opened at 4, 4.5. It's down to 3.5. I'll take the Canes plus the 3.5. Staying in the ACC, Duke with Riley Leonard or without. Big question mark there. I just like NC State tomorrow. I actually think they're going to start playing some pretty good football. They're getting 3.5 in Durham. The public likes Duke. I think Riley Leonard will play. I like the Wolfpack tomorrow to win outright, but take them plus 3.5 in the smell test. Kentucky got slaughtered last week in their head-to-head matchup with Georgia. I had Georgia in the smell test last week. Missouri played one of the most entertaining games of the year. They lost 49-39 at home against LSU for their first loss of the year, but Missouri can really move the football. They're catching a short number in Lexington. It's 2.5. The public likes Kentucky. By the half point, take Missouri plus the 3. UCLA was in the smell test last week. Had them against Washington State. They won by 8. They're getting 3.5 Saturday night, tomorrow night, against Oregon State. UCLA is nasty defensively. Really good. That line is short. Public pounding Oregon State. I'll take UCLA. Sunday, just 3 plays. One of them you're going to absolutely hate. The Panthers plus buying the half point, 14 at Miami. I did it to you last week with the Giants. I'm doing it to you again this week with the Panthers. If you decide not to play the game, I completely understand. Just don't play Miami. Every bookmaker in the world is going to need Carolina to cover in this game. I'll take them. It's a system pick, if you will, by the half point, take the Panthers plus 14. I like the Seahawks plus the 3 buying the half point at Cincinnati. You know, 1 week of very impressive Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase play last week in Glendale, got the public back on the Bengals. They're at home laying the short number against, I think, a very good Seattle team. I'll take the Seahawks plus the 3. And then Detroit's laying 3 at Tampa in one of the late windows Sunday afternoon. I'll take Tampa plus the 3. John Q. Public loves Detroit right now. Good reason to love them, for sure. But they think 3 is way too few. So I'll take Tampa. Recapping, after last night splitting the two games, Wisconsin minus 10, Miami plus 3.5, NC State plus 3.5, Missouri plus 3, UCLA plus 3.5, Seattle plus 3, the Panthers plus 14, and the Bucks plus 3. There is your smell test for the week. One quick note about Maryland at Illinois. Maryland was almost on the wrong side of the smell test this week. They are getting 14, they're laying 14, excuse me, against the Illini. You know, the Terps played so well last week at Ohio State. The final score, as we talked about earlier in the week, was not indicative of how well they played. They just committed too many errors, too many mistakes. You know, the 4th-and-1 miss in the early portion of the game, the end of first half, taking points off the board by letting the clock run out with a check down underneath, which was just inexplicable. They had a 1st-and-goal inside the Ohio State 5, came away with 3, threw a pick 6, threw another pick in a 17-17 game. You can't self-inflict, and that's what Leah did in that game. He made all the big plays that kept him in it, but made a lot of bad plays. I think that this week is a bit of a trap game for Maryland. Illinois is pretty good defensively. Last week they were anyway. They're a disappointment this year. Don't get me wrong. Brett Bielema is a hell of a coach. I thought this had a chance to be a big year for Illinois in the Big Ten West. And they are in dead last place, 0-3, 2-4 overall. Their only two wins are over Toledo and FAU. They lost to Penn State. They lost to Kansas. I mean, they had some tough games early on. Now, you know, after getting blown out by Purdue, they lost at home last week and only scored 7 points against Nebraska. Why is Maryland only laying 14? The Terps, maybe with a little bit of a letdown after last week. They didn't win the game, but it's kind of like what Washington had coming off the loss at Philadelphia, where they really felt good about themselves. Be careful, Terps, tomorrow. They should win the game. Would not surprise me if it's a little bit closer. Plus, weather could be a factor tomorrow. Rainy day tomorrow, all day, pretty much everywhere in this region. So, you know, look out with, you know, the handling of the football. Maryland's been great at taking the ball away from teams. Last week, they gave it away a couple of times, and it really hurt. But hopefully Maryland can get this win, get to 3-1 in the Big Ten, 6-1, which would make them bowl eligible again. They're going to get there, and I think they'll get there tomorrow. But I think it'll be a closer game than most people think. Will I bet Illinois? I don't know. Maybe. But I hate doing that. If it's not in the smell test, I'm just rooting for the Terps to win by 50. That would be nice. I'd like to see them in the rankings, if possible, by the time they get to their matchup with Penn State in about 3 weeks, it is. I think it's November 4th. They've got Northwestern after a bye week and then Penn State. So, yeah, 3 weeks. All right, that is it for the show. Back on Monday.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.